Today, we start with Chapter 2, Training of the New Human Revolution, Volume 2, and we'll be reading pages 89 to 109. So let's begin. The dazzling summer sun heralded the arrival of a season of training. A colourful parade of parasols made its way down a road along the bank of the Sumida River, its waters sparkling in the sunlight. It was July 22, 1960, and members were on their way to the second Women's Division Convention. The first Women's Division Convention had been held on July 28 the previous year. The convention had been proposed by Shinichi Yamamoto, who, as the sole general administrator of the organization at the time, had been responsible for running the entire Soka Gakkai. Shinichi felt that to promote the Kosenryufu movement on a more diversified scale, it was important to have activities that would give full play to each division's unique qualities. This, in addition to activities such as discussion meetings that involved the coordinated efforts of all the divisions. In the women's division in particular, daytime activities had to be strengthened so that housewives could make the best use of their time, providing them with greater opportunities to do activities based on their common foundation as women also let them display their abilities more fully. Based on this idea, and in close discussion with Soka Gakkai General Director Takeo Konishi and Women's Division Chief Katsuki Ohara, Shinichi formulated plans to hold a Women's Division Convention. Giving deep thought to the roles women play, he racked his brains over the question of genuine liberation of women. Without women's happiness, society could not really prosper. The second Women's Division Convention began at 12:30 p.m. The room was packed and, despite the sweltering midsummer heat, all the women were in buoyant spirits. A woman who had remarried after being widowed in the war and left with a small son to care for shared her experience. Her new husband had 6 children of his own, and she had been having problems in her relationship with them. On top of this, her husband, who ran a textile dyeing factory, had reached an impasse at work and had started gambling. Endless quarrels with her husband, combined with economic hardship and her discordant relations with his children, led her to contemplate suicide. In the midst of this, an acquaintance told the couple about Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism, and they both decided to join the Soka Gakkai. As they continued to chant Daimoku, the husband quit gambling and worked with greater energy and enthusiasm. The woman's relations with her stepchildren also improved. In this way, she explained, she could realize the happy and harmonious home life that had long been her dream. This experience was a record of one woman's human revolution, her transformation into a person who loved not only her own child but felt equal affection for her stepchildren, and who also could embrace her husband with warmth and understanding. Liberated from her unhappy fate, and with the sun now shining in her heart, she was a genuine example of a woman who had gained a new lease of life. Enthusiastic applause followed. The woman's experience was only an event in the small realm of a single family, but it spoke of the boundless potential of such an event to change society itself. The family is a garden of value creation built through the joint efforts of its members, an oasis of tranquility and revitalization that restores the energy and vigor of each member to face the new day, the soil in which human character is cultivated. The family is the foundation of society. There can be no social prosperity unless the family is solid. And without peace in society, the family cannot enjoy true happiness. In this equation also lies the formula for world peace. The woman who gained the ability to give affection ungrudgingly to her stepchildren most likely became equally able to love other people, even strangers. If the creative energy that brought harmony and happiness to one family was turned towards society, it would without doubt become a tremendous force for peace. Shinichi Yamamoto felt that if in every family there was a woman with a warm, sunny presence, society too would undoubtedly be bathed in light and warmth. After announcements of upcoming activities and determinations and hopes shared by several women, Women's Division Chief Kiyohara took the rostrum. Today, though some of what I have to say may be disagreeable, I would like to take a look at the current state of the Women's Division activities. With these words, Kiyohara launched into her subject. We of the Women's Division have undertaken activities freely with the guidance of President Yamamoto, contributing greatly to the Soka Gakkai. However, we tend to become self-righteous, withdraw into our own shells, and turn a deaf ear to any opinion different from our own. In activities too, I have the impression that there are now not a few among us who tend to pin the blame on others immediately when things don't go the way they plan, crying, "It's because the men's division isn't serious," or "the youth division isn't being responsible enough." At home, if a mother completely ignores what her child has to say and tries to do everything from A to Z her own way, inevitably the child will rebel. Should she blame her husband or children every time something goes wrong? They will become apathetic and depressed. Instead of behaving so narrow-mindedly towards those in your environment, strive to acquire the generosity of spirit to embrace everyone warmly, as does the sun. When bathed in the sun's light, even solidly frozen snow will melt, allowing young shoots to sprout. Let us Women's Division members embrace everyone with our bright smiles, becoming the sun that illuminates our homes, our organizations, and our communities. I fear women often tend to complain or speak ill of others behind their backs. In the realm of faith, however, this constitutes one of the 14 slanders and leads to the eradication of your good fortune. To gossip maliciously about fellow members is an act of great contempt. Surely, if we are to call ourselves genuine members of the Soka Gakkai's Women's Division, then we must rid ourselves of such a murky and ignoble spirit and instead strive cheerfully in faith with hearts as clear as the glorious blue sky of early summer. Furthermore, women with children need to realize that in the family, they are the ones responsible for teaching their children faith. The other day, I asked some leaders of the Young Women's Division what had motivated them to join. All the seven young women said they had started practicing after observing their mother's attitude and actions, seeing the way their mothers always did their best, always with a smile, never complaining despite the various hardships they faced from day to day. In other words, the daughters began to practice because they realized that faith was the source of their mother's strength, compassion, and greatness. Compare this with the mother who, though a leader in the organization and appearing admirable on the surface, does nothing but complain once she arrives home saying, "I'm so tired," or "What a day," and neglects to fulfill her responsibilities in the family. The children of such a mother will rarely practice. There is one more point. Although all of you undoubtedly face many problems, please challenge them by devoting yourselves earnestly to your Soka Gakkai activities. For instance, you may be worried because things aren't going well for your husbands at work. Besides praying to solve this problem, it's important, I feel, to make a specific goal in your activities for that month. For example, to teach one of your friends about faith or to chant a certain amount of Daimoku. In other words, make your problems an impetus for your activities for Kosen Rufu. If you work and pray for Kosen Rufu, you will definitely receive benefit. What's important, therefore, is to use every activity as a means to challenge each of your problems and turn it into a stepping stone to happiness. If activities come to have clear meaning for you as individuals, you will find energy and strength. Let's all walk with confidence along this sure path to happiness. Kiara's guidance was tailored perfectly for the Women's Division Convention. Her words penetrated the problem areas to which women were especially susceptible. It seemed as though her observations had struck rather too close to home, however, for when she finished, the participants' faces had grown somewhat tense. After several leaders had spoken, President Yamamoto addressed the gathering. Dressed casually in an open-necked shirt, Japanese fan in hand, Shinichi took his place at the rostrum. Smiling to relieve the members' tension, Shinichi began to speak. The new cabinet of Prime Minister Hayato Ikeda, inaugurated 3 days ago, includes the first woman minister of health and welfare, a fact that is attracting much attention. Having heard the splendid guidance given by our women's division leaders, however, I am sure that any of you could do a magnificent job even as Prime Minister of this country. Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, recently elected the world's first woman Prime Minister, Sirimavo Bandaranaike. This is a sign, I feel, the time has finally arrived for the women's division. Don't you agree? His words were greeted with a thunderous applause. If Japan's pre-war cabinet had been made up from among you, the war would surely never have happened. You would also never permit wasting the taxpayers' money. This can be seen in the way you deal with your husbands every day, Shinichi added humorously. Every day you probably say to them, "You're not smoking again, are you? It's bad for your health and expensive, so please quit." What, you want a drink? You haven't done gongyo yet, have you? Can't you be content with a cup of tea? I really feel rather sorry for your husbands to have to endure this each day. There was an outburst of laughter. Then, when your husbands complain, you come back with an answer that beats their 10 times over, saying, "I'm telling you this out of compassion because I really care about you. I sympathize with them." Again, there was explosive laughter. Some laughed so hard that their sides ached and tears came to their eyes. Jokes aside, I believe that when you attend a Soka Gakkai meeting, it must be so thoroughly enjoyable that it completely wipes away your pain and suffering. Since faith requires rigorous Buddhist practice, we must not forget a sense of strictness in seeking the law. Other than that, however, why don't we conduct our meetings pleasantly, cheerfully, and full of happy and harmonious high spirits? Who agrees? The members raised their hands in cheerful reply. Some rules and structure are necessary for the running of any group or organization. However, Shinichi tried as much as possible to rid the Soka Gakkai of stern formalism and uniformity and instead make it open and free. This is because faith and Buddhism exist to allow people to live more humbly. Shinichi Yamamoto then related his own experience as a youth. The period of President Toda's harrowing struggle to rebuild his business after the war was also the most painful time in my own life. My health was extremely poor, my wages continued to be in arrears, and I pushed myself beyond my limits day in and day out. I once let some words of defeat slip out in Mr. Toda's presence. I'll never forget his stern reproach. "Shinichi," he said, "faith is a never-ending battle against impasse and obstacles. It is a struggle between the Buddha and the devilish functions, between negative and positive forces. This is the meaning of the phrase, Buddhism is concerned with winning." Shinichi continued, "Everyone encounters an impasse at some point in life. Some people may experience a deadlock in business. A couple may come to a standstill in their relationship. Some may feel they have reached a stalemate in raising their children, in their relations with other people, in their propagation activities or in their study of Buddhist teachings. However, the power of the Gohonzon is immeasurable, as vast as the universe itself. Our lives, too, have infinite potential. Everything hinges, therefore, on whether we allow our inner determination to become deadlocked. When we truly grasp this point, the path to victory is already open. Should you feel stuck, please challenge to overcome your own weakness, summoning the great power of faith. President Toda said this is how we can discard the transient and reveal the true in our own lives. In the long course of our life, we may occasionally feel like giving up our faith and just having a good time, free from all responsibility. Or we may become ill or be plunged into grief by the death of a loved one. This is our struggle against the hindrances of earthly desires, illness, and death. Buddhism's greatest significance lies in overcoming such impasses through chanting Daimoku, attaining a state of absolute happiness, and realizing the most meaningful of lives. Therefore, whenever you encounter difficulty, I hope you will view it as a struggle against an impasse, as a battle against obstacles, and resolving that now is the time to win, boldly forge your path in life as you challenge your destiny head on. These women were waging a frontline battle with the realities of daily life as defenders of their family's happiness. Shinichi was well aware of the hardships they had to endure. This is why he wanted to light a torch of courage in each of their hearts. The summer sun beating down on the gymnasium roof and the passionate enthusiasm of the participants combined to transform the hall into a virtual steam bath. The women were drenched in perspiration, but their eyes shone beautifully with the light of their seeking spirit. Shinichi kept the rest of his speech brief. The fact that you women's division members are so cheerful, pure-hearted, beautiful, and filled with energy is itself proof of the brilliance of this faith. I hope each of you will lead a joyous and meaningful life, attaining such a state of freedom that when the time comes for you to celebrate your silver or golden wedding anniversary, for example, you can travel anywhere in the world you wish. On that note, I conclude my speech. The Women's Division Convention closed amid a storm of applause. After the meeting, the women set off lightheartedly for the Asakusa station. Perspiration poured from their bodies as they walked down the road in the sweltering heat. But in the shade of their parasols, their faces were lit with beautiful smiles. Let's do our best. Faith is a struggle against impasse. With this determination, the cheerful procession of women strode ahead with even greater resolve. Their hearts focused on the goal of achieving 3 million member households. Beginning that summer and continuing into the fall, Shinichi felt a pressing need to embark on a full-fledged program of training for youth to help forge each person into a leader capable of assuming great responsibility. If today's youth grew and gained ability, he thought, it would be possible to build a solid foundation for the Soka Gakkai at least into the 21st century. The 4 decades until that time, when viewed in the vast span of human history, would probably be the most important and decisive period for worldwide Kosen Rufu. He had vowed in his heart to develop young people into capable individuals of wisdom and courage. The schedule for the youth division training had already been decided through autumn. First, an outdoor training camp for the young men's division, Suiko Kai, was to be held at Inubosaki in Chiba Prefecture on July 30th and 31st. Also on July 31st, an outdoor training camp for the young women's division, Kaiokai, was scheduled at Futsu in the same prefecture. Meanwhile, the annual summer training session would be held from August 5th to 9th. Here, too, Shinichi wanted to focus on training the young men and women. Each region would also have a sports meet starting with Chubu and Kyushu on August 14, followed by a national sports meet on September 23rd. Shinichi realized that the more broadly and thoroughly the youth were trained, the more their characters would be forged and their faith deepened. The sky was overcast in the Kanto region on July 30th, but the sun peeked through the clouds from time to time, sending down bright shafts of light. The young men scheduled to take part in the outdoor training camp for the Suiko Kai assembled at the Soka Gakkai headquarters at 1 p.m. The Suiko Kai was founded by Josei Toda in December 1952 to foster young men capable of assuming core responsibility for the Kosenrufu movement. It began with 38 members chosen from the ranks of the young men's division. Meeting twice a month, they received direct instruction and training from Toda, using as their main study text the Chinese classic Water Margin. Toda had hoped to entrust this group with the full responsibility of realizing Kosenrufu. However, in June the following year, he suddenly suspended the meetings, angered by what he saw as a decline in the members' seeking spirit. Shinichi Yamamoto, also a member of the Suiko Kai at that time, had felt deeply responsible that his colleagues, unaware of their mentor's profound intent, had lost sight of the purpose of the Suiko Kai and grown inert and apathetic. After deeply pondering the matter, Shinichi conceived the idea of an oath in which the Suiko Kai members would pledge to dedicate their lives to Kosenrufu. He presented a draft of this oath to Toda as an expression of apology and thereby gained his permission to reinitiate the Suiko Kai. Starting from scratch, the Suiko Kai was re-established with 43 members, carefully selected from among the 3,000 young men's division members. The group was officially launched on July 21st, and each member signed the oath drafted by Shinichi in Josei Toda's presence. These members formed the first class of the Suiko Kai. The fourth class of the Suiko Kai was now in term, and four outdoor training camps had already been held. At the first camp, held in September 1954, the members gathered with Toda at a camp outside at Hikawa, on the outer edges of Tokyo. In June the following year, the second camp was held at Lake Kawaguchi and Lake Yamanaka in Yamanashi Prefecture. This was the last Suiko Kai camp Toda attended. After Toda's death, in April 1958, the outdoor training camps were revived following Shinichi's proposal. One was held again at the Lake Kawaguchi in July 1958 and another at Hikawa in July 1959. The objective of these camps was to allow members to renew their oath to Toda and to fulfill the mission of the Suiko Kai. The guidance Toda had given at the earlier meetings of the Suiko Kai was etched vividly in Shinichi's heart. Especially unforgettable was the first camp at Hikawa. With his gaze fixed unwaveringly on the campfire, Toda had said with deep feeling, "This may sound strange, but I want to state this clearly tonight. 10 years from today, why don't we all gather here again? For there is something I want to ask of you at that time." The eyes of the young men gleamed more brightly. Mr. Toda had spoken each word with great deliberation. Everyone listened solemnly, all eyes focused on him. As Kosenrufu continued to advance, he said, it was certain that the three powerful enemies would assail them. However, he declared, no matter what trials lay ahead, ultimately, the prosperity of Japan and lasting world peace could be achieved only through the Buddhist law. In conclusion, he said, I trust you all from the bottom of my heart. I would like all of you to gather here again at the dawn of Kosenrufu. In the meantime, none of you here today must ever backslide in faith. Is that clear? Just as Toda had predicted, 3 years later, the Soka Gakkai was lashed by a succession of fierce storms. First, the Yubari Coal Miners Union incident, and then the Osaka vote buying incident, following which Shinichi Yamamoto was arrested on false charges. Their mentor, however, would not be at the gathering 10 years later, for he died on April 2, 1958. Shinichi clearly understood what Toda had wanted to ask his Suikokai disciples at their reunion a decade later. Mysteriously, the year of that reunion would coincide with the 7th anniversary of Toda's death. Had he been alive, Toda would surely have achieved his membership goal of 3 million households, which he had clearly set forth in his final will to Shinichi. Toda undoubtedly wanted to entrust Shinichi and the other Suikokai youth with the responsibility for putting the finishing touches on all aspects of the Kosenrufu movement in Japan. He had hoped that a great flourishing of culture in all realms of society, including politics, economics, and education, would be built upon the solid, unshakable foundation of 3 million households. With Shinichi at the helm, the Soka Gakkai was now on its way to realizing a membership of 3 million households by the 7th anniversary of Toda's death. Considering this, Shinichi felt compelled to make this year's Suikokai outdoor training camp an opportunity for the group's young members to stand up with him as fully empowered and capable representatives of Toda and make a fresh start truly at one with their mentor. He vowed to make the camp a starting point for these gallant heroes of Kosenrufu. If Toda could observe them, he would wholeheartedly rejoice and rest assured. Shinichi had given a great deal of thought to selecting the site for the training camp before deciding on Inubosaki in Chiba Prefecture. There, one could see the sun rising over the Pacific Ocean, the ocean that linked Japan with America, where later that fall Shinichi would take his first step for the realization of world peace. It was the perfect setting for a gathering of valiant youth poised to set sail on the great ocean of Kosenrufu. The Suikokai members left the Soka Gakkai headquarters for Inubosaki at 1:30 p.m. aboard 3 chartered buses. Shinichi began sharing guidance and giving encouragement from the moment they assembled. He had also written words of inspiration, which he presented to several of the leaders to commemorate this auspicious training session. Shinichi rode with the young men on the first bus. By the time they passed Ryugoku, downtown Tokyo, they began to take turns conducting and singing Soka Gakkai songs. Later, they split into 2 teams and a heated singing contest began. The atmosphere on the bus, however, became one of merrymaking that would have been more appropriate for a pleasure trip. One young man, while enthusiastic, sang so appallingly off-key that he burst out laughing in mid-chorus. The voice of another grew gradually smaller and smaller as he sang. One even forgot the lyrics and stopped singing halfway through. Watching this lamentable spectacle on the bus, Shinichi recalled Josai Toda. The youth division members had often snug in front of Toda, who would listen to them intently and invariably offer guidance on the way they sang. Toda had been especially strict when it came to songs that had some special meaning to him, like the Song of Comrades, the lyrics of which he had composed in prison, and the well-loved Japanese song Kusunoki the Great. "How can you appreciate the spirit of the song if you sing it like that?" Toda had scolded. "Look at me when you sing, and sing from your diaphragm." Shinichi had also had many opportunities to perform in front of Toda. Sometimes he had been told to sing the same song 20 or 30 times until Toda declared, "That's it, that's how it should be sung." Through each small action, Toda had striven with all his might to teach the youth the Soka Gakkai spirit and how a leader of Kosenrufu should live. There was not the slightest frivolity in his training. He was deadly earnest throughout. Now, listening to the youth sing, Shinichi thought, the Suikokai should be a vital training for him. But I can't sense even the slightest awareness among any of these members of the need to actively seek out training and develop themselves. What would President Oda say if he could see them? Especially since we have gathered specifically to make a new start for Kosen Rufu towards the 7th anniversary of his death. Shinichi's expression clouded. He took the microphone himself and proclaimed, the members of the Soikokai must never do anything half-heartedly, even if it's just singing a song. A song can move people. It can inspire them with courage and a fighting spirit. For that to happen, however, the singer must have a deep feeling for the meaning of the lyrics and infuse his whole being into the song. In the future, there may be many opportunities for you to travel overseas. You may meet with the world's leading figures in various fields. You may, on occasion, even be welcomed with song and dance or with musical performances, and you may be expected to respond in kind. Consequently, the ability to sing may also be considered an important requirement for a leader. That's another reason why you should seriously learn to sing well now. I'll show you how a song should be sung. Shinichi then began to sing The Mist of Kawanakajima, a song of the battle waged between the forces of rival Japanese warlords, Uesugi Kenshin and Takeda Shingen. There are no sounds of men or horses, and even the grass droops low. His voice was melodic, resonant, and filled with passion. With the first verse, the hushed and solemn scene at the Kawanakajima, heavy with tension before the battle, was painted vividly in the listeners' minds. The second verse conjured images of the heroic battle unfolding. In the third verse, each listener keenly savored Uesugi Kenshin's bitter regret at having failed to cut down his enemy, Takeda Shingen. The masterful blending of lyrics, melody, and voice completely immersed the young men on the bus in the world of Kawanakajima. All listened with rapt attention. When the song ended, Shinichi was greeted with enthusiastic applause. He then began to sing the first senior high school dormitory song. Ah, a flower petal floats in my cup, the moon reflected in the exquisite sake. This time everyone felt the gallant, pulsing spirit of a student who resolves to stand up and take responsibility for the country and the world. The song was also an expression of Shinichi's own lofty determination to dedicate his life to Kosen Rufu. Shinichi sang several more songs. All applauded his efforts, emotion evident in their expressions. Yet it was difficult to know to what extent the young men understood Shinichi's sentiments at that moment. It was after 5:30 when they finally reached Inubosaki, traveling via Yokai Chiba in Chiba Prefecture. The sun was already low in the western sky, but the beach was still bright at midsummer. At the tip of the peninsula stood a tall, white lighthouse. Waves tossed up white spray as they crashed on the cliffs below. In the pine forest along the beach was a campsite filled with rows of bungalows and tents standing side by side. This was where the Suikokai members would be spending the night. Stepping off the bus, the young men headed towards the campground, luggage in hand, an air of festivity prevailing as they struggled along, absorbed in casual chatter. For a gathering intended as an opportunity for training and a starting point for the youthful leaders on whose shoulders the Kosen Rufu movement would rest, the young men conducted themselves in an utterly haphazard fashion. one could not sense in them the slightest pride in being members of the Suikokai. There was clearly a great disparity between their commitment and Shinichi Yamamoto's hopes for them. A training session was set for 6:30 in a clearing atop a small hill nearby. It would be conducted around the campfire as the group ate dinner. They had asked a local inn to fix tonjiru, a traditional Japanese pork and vegetable soup, another fare for their meal, but the task had proved more time-consuming than expected and preparations were running substantially behind schedule. Not wanting to keep the members waiting, Shinichi arrived at the meal site 5 minutes before the designated time. When he got there, he saw that firewood had been piled up in readiness for the campfire, while most of the members sat waiting on straw mats they had spread out on the ground. Seeing Shinichi, one of the young men's division's senior leaders hastily turned to the youth sitting next to him and said, "The meal staff is late. Sensei is already here. Go and tell them to hurry up." Ideally, senior leaders charged with coordinating an activity must swiftly assess the overall situation and take prompt action when necessary. For example, augmenting personnel in those areas running behind schedule. Not only did this particular leader fail to take any such measures, he made no personal effort at all. Instead, he just angrily berated his fellow members. Such behavior is truly irresponsible. Those with nothing to do just sat around casually chatting. "Dinner sure is late. I'm starving. I'm more worried about tonight, seeing there won't be any late night snacks." "Don't worry, I brought some with me." Catching snatches of their conversation, Shinichi was deeply disappointed. Those responsible for preparing the meal now worked frantically to make up lost time. Why didn't the senior leaders give any consideration to the difficult situation their fellow members had been placed in? Why didn't they make any move to help them? Unforeseen occurrences are a constant in the Kosen Rifu movement. At such times, their true unity would be called to a test. The situation with the meal may have seemed minor, but it was, in a sense, indicative of a more pervasive attitude. With that, we come to the end of today's reading. I hope you have a nice day.